Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And we've got another busy show in store. We'll look back at England's dominant win over India in the third test and look ahead to the fourth with Chris Wokes set to return to the side, we think. We'll also get the Indian perspective with cricket writer and broadcaster Chetan Narula, and we'll pay tribute to the former England captain Ted Dexter, who passed away at the age of 86. Plenty to come over the next hour. You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. Army, a week's a long time in this game. A day can be a long time. And a week ago, there was me saying there was no optimism for England in the third test match. Couldn't see any runs coming from the top three. Wondered how we'd get 20 Indian wickets. I tell you what, I've got a bowl full of humble pie and I'm going to tuck into it during the show.
I agree. I think the momentum shift was basically down to a toss of a coin. I wouldn't blame them for the result when it comes to the toss. I still think it was win the toss, you could bat first on that surface, not a problem at all. Some of the shots India played in that first 45 minutes were not shots you should be playing in England on day one against the Duke ball, against Jimmy Anderson. You know, three or four guys pushing at the ball, driving the ball, big booming drives. And the momentum shift was from there, and it was huge. I was very, very surprised on England's body language. I thought they were brilliant. I didn't think there was any hangover from Lords. And I think the credit goes to the captain for me, because at Lords, he sat there like a naughty little schoolboy, baby faced, Joe Root sitting there, end of the test match press conference. And he said, it was my fault. I'll take the responsibility. But I've scored 1,300 runs this calendar year, so you're not going to be throwing too much at me. So the rest of it comes to me. All my problem. I'll defend my team. And I think his celebration when he got his 100 towards the balcony was a thank you to his teammates to say, you know what? Yeah, I took one for you last week, but you've took one. And you've got me one back this week, because the way you've performed with the ball, first of all, and now what we've done with the bat, we are right back in this test series. And we look like the team that's going to win it.
You know, England have got it so, so right with the last two captains. And I'll be the first to admit that when Alistair Cook was the captain in waiting, I really wondered. I really had doubts about how he would handle the job. He didn't look or sound or come across like a man who particularly wanted the job. And he never really exuded a great deal of confidence. But what a captain he turned out to be.
Yeah.
And exactly the same with Joe Root. You just thought, no, don't groom him for the captaincy. He's just not natural. Yeah, let him be. He's a free spirit. As you said, he's a cheeky chappy. And I just couldn't see him developing into what he is now, England's most successful test captain.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think two guys I know reasonably well, and their whereabouts in the changing rooms when they weren't captain, didn't sort of think, right, they're going to be natural leaders and natural born captains. And NASA was a natural born leader. He still hasn't got many mates, to be fair, Nasser, but he wasn't this warm character that everybody's sort of chasing for dinner and things like that. He'll give you some stick for saying this, but he was a natural leader, Nasser. But Cookie's not, and naturally he wasn't somebody that would want to, he would like to be in with the troops and in the trenches with the lads. And I think Joe's exactly the same. You're right. So from that point of view, the way they've turned out, both of them, to lead the country the way they have done and still perform with the bat the way they have done, for me, is a mark of greatness. And I think Joe is about to be England's the greatest ever player, because the way he scores and runs now, I can see him catching Sir Alastair Cook. I really can. I can see him getting to that mark of around about 13,000 test match runs, which I didn't think was possible probably 18 months ago. But now, the way he's batting, the way he's leading his side, I think he's absolutely brilliant. And I think with the way he played at Headingley in front of his home crowd, was a marker to everybody around the world to say, I'm back at the top, at the summit where I deserve to be. He's got 1,397 runs, leading run scorer in 2021. And he's second leading run scorer because he's got 820 of them against India. And I think next is Rohit Sharma with about 700. So I can't say too much more highly what this young man has done for the country with a bat and with a leader. And I think it would be great if he's on the winning side in this series.
We all love a good stat. And the one that I enjoyed was Joe Root became the first man in the history of Test cricket to score hundreds in three consecutive Test matches twice in a year. Yeah. There are lots and lots of records that he's joined other, but you know, there's a time and a place to say it's all about winning. It's the team that matters. And, you know, that. But sometimes you just have to say thank you and when you're praised. And I loved Joe Root answering the question about how proud he was to have. When we say England's most successful test captain, we're talking about most wins. And he's got one more than Michael Vaughan now. This is what Joe Root said about that after the game.
Well, I'm as I mentioned before the game, I'm living my boyhood dream. I'm captain in England, something that dreamt of doing from being really small. Obviously proud to have gone past Michael, but you don't do that on your own as a captain. That's down to the group of players, the players that you've got around you and the coaching staff as well. It's all one big thing. You're just you're one making the decisions, but they're the ones that are going out there time and time again, putting in big performances, and they're really proud of the way they managed to do that this week.
I like that. There's an art to accepting praise, isn't there, Harmy?
Yeah, he's just brilliant. I think he's a great ambassador for our country, for our team, our sport. I think young kids playing on Sunday morning, Saturday afternoon would have been glued, obviously, with the school holidays on. They'd have been watching the test match, seeing a magician at work. And I think when he speaks, especially when he speaks after something positive, there's always a little element of jest in there, a little element of fun. There's a little grin on his face, as though he is that naughty little schoolboy, but he's actually done something. He's done something the teacher wants to give him wrong for, but actually quite enjoys what he's done. And I still think they've got some decisions to make coming this week at the Oval. They brought Wokes in, you know, brought Mahmood in the week before. They haven't been playing cricket, so a fine balance to get the right 11 on the pitch for the Oval.
All right, lots of questions then. We think, both of us, that Chris Wokes will definitely play. He gave Sam Curran a ringing vote of confidence when he was asked about his place after the Headingley test. So it sounded like he was going to play. I don't know whether Curran and Wokes can both play. Does Mark Wood come back? It'll be hard on Craig Overton. Joss Butler, we know, isn't going to be there. He's going to be at the birth of his second child. So Johnny Bairstow takes the gloves. Gosh, there are a lot of questions, aren't there? Who comes in Joss Butler's place?
I think it's Ollie Pope. I think it's Pope for me. I think Pope comes in at number five. Bairstow back to six. There's been some big statements made recently, but this could be the end for Joss Butler. I really think that he misses this test match. If Pope scores runs against India at the Oval on his home ground, Bairstow does well. Where does Butler come back in? Because he's
Harmy,
doesn't stack up.
I heard you say this on the Following On podcast, and I thought, I think he's misread that. I reckon you thought it was two balls left and it straight on. And it, for one reason only, and that, and I understand exactly where you're coming from, but Josh Butler's going on paternity leave. Who's not going to give him the gloves back when he's only handed them over because he's going on paternity leave?
Yeah, but for me, I've always been a big one, man, is that the shirt's yours. And I know Chris Silverwood bangs on about the rotation policy this and rotation policy that, what they developed in the winter because of COVID and stuff like that. But I understand what you're saying about the paternity leave section, and that fine. You know, as a father, I've got no problem with Josh Butler going away, and we wish the Butlers all the very best from everybody at TalkSport. We hope that everything goes well for the Butler family. But when you come to playing professional sport, if Bairstow and Pope get runs in a frail batting unit that haven't been scoring runs, you can't really say, well, I deserve my place back because I average around about 30 in test match cricket. If he was averaging 45, he walks straight back in the team. But he's got, what has he got, 200s, 300s in 50 test matches, batting at number six. The weight of runs is not there for me for him to walk straight back in. You have to have something behind you to say, right, I deserve to come straight back in. And being vice captain, being a good sounding board, being a good guy in a dressing room and a level-headed calmness that is around, for me, is just not quite enough to warrant walking straight back into a team.
England head coach Chris Silverwood admitted that the rest and rotation policy during the pandemic would have to be looked at when England got heavily beaten in India. But now, after a rousing victory, this is what he had to say about the rest and rotation policy, sounding a bit more like he was defending it this time.
To be honest, I don't regret one minute what we did in the winter. We always put our people first, and that's what we did. We looked after the guys. And it's, although obviously we're looking at other people now, I think it was the right thing to do in the winter. And should we be faced with a similar situation at any other point, it's certainly something I would have to consider doing as well. It's imperative that we look after the people we've got, whether it be staff, players or whoever. You know, we've got to give them the best opportunity to perform.
That was England's Chris Silverwood. And finally, Harmy, if Josh Butler was unavailable, let's say, for the T20 World Cup, that would be hold the back page headline news. I sort of wonder, people are talking about Josh Butler couldn't miss the Ashes, you know, young family, just had a second child. As you said, we hope that all goes well and smoothly. You know, with Ben Foulkes and Johnny Bairstow and you know, I just sort of wonder, I'm a massive Josh Butler fan, but if he didn't go on the Ashes, you know, would it be that much of a, I mean, we're not talking like Joe Root not going, are we?
Not yet, no. We're the only one that seems to have the noise. There was an article at the weekend by Simon Wilde who said up to 10 players won't go to the Ashes. I mean, 10 players is a lot of players. A lot of players in a team. And if he's saying 10, then you probably are talking about all the guys with children and Root and Anderson and all that are one. And that's why I made that, you know, big bold claim that it wouldn't surprise me if Anderson walks at the end of Manchester because if he thinks the Ashes is not going to go ahead. I think he'd want to go on his terms rather than, and it will go ahead, the Ashes will go ahead. Just depends on who's playing. But Butler seems to be the one, or the noise is that it is, Butler's the one that's the first one to say, look, that if my family can't go and I'm not going, I'll back him 100% for that. I know he feels. I know exactly how he feels. So I'm not gonna knock Josh Butler for not going to the Ashes for family reasons. So again, the rest and rotation policy, yeah, brilliant. Well done. We've got seven bowlers out injured at this moment. We've got seven bowlers out injured. My opinion on that is they're not bowling enough. As a former fast bowler, and you get asked to bowl in a test match for 25 overs and in the space of a day and a bit, you run the risk of your body packing up. You know, at the minute, this rest and rotation policy for me, from a bowling point of view, is not working because we are getting bowlers constantly injured. You look at the one we've got that we are going back to the well every time, and that's Anderson. And, you know, bowling's about rhythm, and bowling's about the more you bowl, for me, the better you get and the more in sync your action is and how your hardened muscles and everything that goes with it. As soon as you start stopping and starting, you run the risk of getting injured. And I think that's where England have been with this rest and rotation policy on the bowling front.
And it's time now to discuss what went so wrong for the tourists after everything went so right at Lord's. We're joined by York Media's Chetan Narula, old friend of TalkSport, of course. People talk about this extraordinary turnaround from England's perspective, but it was equally extraordinary from India's perspective. I mean, you know, how did they become so bad overnight?
Well, you win the toss, you opt to bat first on a soft wicket with the grey cloud cover, and give Jimmy Anderson, one of the greatest fast bowlers, if not the greatest fast bowler of all times, you hand him the new ball, and that's how you lose all your momentum. You puncture all your momentum. The hard fought battle at Lord's, you built up all that momentum. You had England on a platter. You had their batsmen who could not last 60 overs on their home soil. You have a four-pronged pace attack, which is raring to go, and then you win the toss and you choose to bat first. Like I said, that's how you turn around the series. And look, I was telling someone the other day that Christmas should now be celebrated on August 25 in the UK, because Virat Kohli's given them an absolute gift in the series. And Neil, I'll be very honest, the momentum has been punctured to such a great extent, and India's problems have been identified to such a great extent that from here on, England are the favourites to win the series.
And Chen, about the tosses one thing, the performance is the next thing. And there's a whole host of things I think India need to look at. I said right from the very start, before the test match started, that Rishabh Pant is a number six, possibly in India. There's no way he can bat number six and bat the way he bats like that against the moving ball in England. And that, you know, that seems to have come true. The middle order's not, you know, fired, even though Pujara got 91, but you just thought, even during that partnership, they're one wicket away from just being run through. Where do India go from here when it comes to changes? Do they bring a batsman in? Do they bring another bowler in? Do they move Pant down to seven? Is Virat Kohli's ego going to have anything like that to consider?
I think India are being obtuse about their team selection. If you remember the pre-series show that we did, I told you clearly, you know, the one way India will lose this test series if they screw up their team selection. And that's what they've been doing. They've been playing five bowlers, out of which four are pacers. And then you play the one spinner who's not really a spinner in English conditions. And one of the greatest all-time spinners is sitting on your bench twiddling thumbs. I mean, I was talking about gifting the toss to England at Leeds. You've also been gifting not playing Ashwin. I mean, you look, if any opposition looks at you and sees Ashwin not in the playing 11 for three continuous test matches, that's an absolute gift. And I think the Indian captain and the Indian team management are being obtuse about their team selection. Even in the post-match, at least they said they batted well in the second innings and this is a formula that will continue. I think they're being absolutely obtuse about this team selection. You asked me what needs to change, batsman or bowler. You need a new batsman as well as a new bowler. I mean, Ashwin should come in. He obviously, if I were Virat Kohli, he would have played all five test matches ahead of Jadeja. He absolutely must come in ahead of Ishan Sharma. If they need to retain Jadeja, that's fine, but he absolutely must play, Ashwin, that is. And I think it's time for a change in the Indian middle order as well. I think Ajinkya Rahane is out of time. However, the big thing is he scored as many runs as Virat Kohli. So who can question Virat Kohli, really? Pujara, just by the skin of his teeth, he's saved himself with that 91. But like I said earlier, you know, a host of problems have been identified in India's lineup. And I think they will be under the pump to make the right changes. If you don't make the right changes, the series is as good as gone.
So let's go back to Rishabh Pant, can we, just for a second?
Yeah.
It's a bugbear of mine, and not that my opinion matters at all, but I have never been able to understand the player who says, well, that's the way I play. And, you know, you hear commentators saying like, oh, well, he only knows one way. I mean, that's like being a tennis player, only being able to play on clay or grass. I mean, if you want to be a great player, you have to be able to adapt your game. You absolutely have to. I mean, there's question marks over his defence, but it's his attitude that, I mean, that's what gets me. It's exhilarating. It's thrilling. It's memorable. It's absolutely wonderful when it comes off. But, you know, when it doesn't, and it won't in England against the Dukes on a seeming wicket,
Absolutely. I agree with you there, Neil, because you need adaptability to survive in international cricket. And this Rishabh Pant reminds me of the Rishabh Pant from a year ago or even 2 years ago, who was really struggling and failing to adapt to international cricket across conditions. I think he turned a tide or turned a corner in Australia this year. I thought he had matured enough. But I think what's happened really is the team management has said that you go and play the way you want to play and you're the X factor and you're going to play the entire series. And there is no real competition. I mean, Ridhiman Saha cannot be the stand-in wicketkeeper or the second choice. His batting is not nearly good enough. And you don't have any other wicketkeeper in the Test arena. Ishan Kishan is back home, who I thought would be a nice contender for that spot. So there's nobody really. He has to play the five Test matches, and that's kind of giving him that leeway. However, to add to your point of adaptability, of taking responsibility, I think that plagues the entire Indian batting lineup, and not just Rishabh Pant at number six. You look at Rohit Sharma, he's been given the license to play his pull shots, and he is getting out to pull shots again and again and again. If the Indian coach or the Indian batting coach can't tell Rohit Sharma to play your pull shot, but play downwards, why do you have to throw your wicket away after battling for 80 deliveries and scoring 30 odd runs and then you throw away your wicket because you want to play the pull shot? Or look at Virat Kohli. You're struggling outside the off stump. You still want to go for that cover drive. Check these shots. Why do you have to play these shots? I mean, I think the Indian team management is letting these big name players, these superstars, do whatever they want. Nobody is checking them in. Nobody is reining them in. And I think that is part of the problem. And things will get much worse before they get better.
Just before Hani asks the next question, here's what Virat Kohli said, backing up what you said. He reckons that playing an extra batsman will be a negative move. And he strongly suggests that Ashwin, the best spinner in the world at the moment, won't play at the Oval. This is what the captain said after the Test match.
I don't believe in that balance. I've never believed in that balance. Because either you can try and save a defeat or you can try and win the game. And we have drawn games in the past with similar number of batters in the team. So if your top six or seven don't do the job, that extra guy is no guarantee of, you know, bailing you out every time. You have to accept that as a team, you take responsibility and take pride in doing the job for the team. If you don't have the ability or the resources to take 20 wickets going into a Test match, then you are already playing for only two results. And that's not how we play.
And on Kohli, how long has he got? With the pressure that I know the pressure on the Indian captain is huge. But if they do leave Rahane out, do bring another batsman in and leave Rahane out after what happened in Australia, how long does then Virat Kohli have, the batsman, the greatest batsman, but as a leader, of taking this team forward?
Honestly, in my opinion, if India lose this series, I think that's curtains for Virat Kohli, the captain. You look back at 2004 and 2005, you look back at Sourav Ganguly, he didn't score runs for 18 innings and Greg Chappell was like, you should quit your captaincy. It's been 25 innings now. And Sourav Ganguly was averaging 33. Virat Kohli is averaging 24. He's only got one half century, which is on par with what Pujara and Rahane have got. Let me be very honest. If Virat Kohli was scoring runs, Pujara would have been dropped after the first test. If Virat Kohli was scoring runs, Rahane would have been dropped after the second test match. That's not happened because and only because Virat Kohli is not scoring runs. And forget not scoring runs. You're doing so many other things. You're engaging with the English cricketers. You're engaging with the English crowd. You have your antics on the ground. You do not have your blinkered approach to scoring runs. You're not buckling down. Your first primary job is to score runs. You're not doing that. You've got a half century, but you've just done enough to save your spot, to save your skin as a batsman and say, oh, you know what? I'm Virat Kohli. I'll carry on this way. India had a great chance of winning the series in South Africa in 2018. Neil Manthorpe was there. India had a great chance of winning the series in England in 2018. We all witnessed that. India have had a great chance of winning in England in 2021. You have four fast bowlers in all these three series. You have the best off spinner in the world in all these series. You have the best batsman in the world in all these series. You're not winning these series. No other Indian captain has had these resources. So what's the problem? The problem is captaincy. Let me go out on a limb and say here right now, if Virat Kohli does not win this series for India, if India does not win this test series, goodbye Virat Kohli as captain. I think it's time for Indian cricket to make a change. Will they make a change? that's a totally different story. We don't have a Greg Chappell. We don't have a Kiran More, somebody who got rid of Sourav Ganguly as captain. We don't have those figures in Indian cricket at the moment. And that's why I think he will continue to be captain, even if he loses this series. But to my mind, his position will be untenable if he doesn't win the series.
Wow. That's some statement, that man is.
Yes, absolutely. Just quickly, I'll have to digest that. just quickly, Ishant Sharma can't play the fourth test match. I mean, I don't know whether he was injured or not. I can't remember who's in this squad. Is Umesh Yadav there? Has he got a chance?
No, I don't think he's got a chance because you have to play Ashwin now. And I think if they're not playing an extra batsman, they're going to shore up the batting with both Jadeja and Ashwin and then play three spinners. The oval pitch has had so much use this past summer, the 100, the blast, the county cricket, everything. And now a test match being played there. So it's going to be on the slower side. Manchester, it's been on the slower side. So if Ashwin plays these two test matches, you go in with three pacers and you play Jadeja. If Jadeja's not fit, then Shardul Thakur might come in. I don't see Umesh Yadav coming in. Ishant Sharma, here's another statement for you. I think his test career is over. I think his international career is over. He's always been a rhythm bowler. He's not looking in any rhythm whatsoever. In the World Test Championship, he was struggling. Bumrah was struggling, but Bumrah's recovered his rhythm. Shami's recovered his rhythm because they've spent time in England. They've spent time at the nets. They've spent time bowling. They've recovered their rhythm. We were looking at this third test match in Leeds. Look at James Anderson, how he's bowling. Every time he starts a new spell, the first over, bang on the line, on the spot, on the money. Ishant Sharma, every time he starts a new spell, two deliveries way outside the off stump, two deliveries down the leg side, one bouncer, and he makes the batsman play just the once. This is not a bowler who's played 100-odd test matches. This is not a bowler who's the leader of the attack. I think Ishant Sharma's time at international cricket is coming to an end very, very quickly. So that's another puzzle for the Indian selectors to sort out.
Yeah, I agree with that. But at least he'll go out as an Indian great. He's got over 300 wickets in 100 test matches, and he's had a brilliant, brilliant career. Chetan, thank you so much indeed. We're going to finish this section with a quick quote from Chris Silverwood talking about the need now to keep India under pressure for the final two test matches.
The key is just getting on top of them. We know they're a very good team. And once they get on top, it's difficult to stop them. You know what I mean? Like you say, we got out of traps the quickest this time. We put them on the back foot and we kept the pressure on them. So, you know, I mean, it shows what you can do if you put teams under pressure. And you know, the game plan that we went in, we've worked. And I thought the guys executed that very well. But as I say, it shows once you put people on the back foot, you know, when the pressure gets there, then we can get into them.
That was England coach Chris Silverwood. Plenty more to come. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Next, we'll look back at the T20 Blast quarterfinals as all four teams from the South Group qualified for final today. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can listen back to the podcast, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Quarterfinals weekend, well, quarterfinals week, T20 Blast. I think it's often over the last five, six, seven, 8 years has represented a key for many, many counties. You know, you get into finals day, you have something to show for the season. And so the quarterfinals for me, I mean, I've looked forward to quarterfinals week or extended weekend for ages and ages and ages, and they often produce some incredible cricket. And this was no exception. Let's start at the Riverside, where Yorkshire had their home game because the test match was going on at Headingley. They got beaten by Sussex, well beaten by five wickets. What did you make about the controversy, if that's the word for it, of Yorkshire bringing in the boundaries at the Riverside to simulate the size of Headingley? I know our dear friend Mark Butcher was livid. He was absolutely livid about it. He said, "You play the game as you play the ground as you find it." But you know what? Personally, Yorkshire lost their home ground advantage and were doing just a small little thing to try and emulate home ground advantage. I didn't have a problem with it. You?
No, not really. I heard Butch and I think Keezy having a bit of a debate and a wind up, and it looked like a football field. You know, there was pointed edges right on, you know, down in, you know, in the pocket corners. The one thing about the Riverside, it's massive. So even when you do bring the boundaries in, you do look as though you're playing on a really small field, but you're not. It's just because of the size of the ground. We play on the biggest ground possible. And Freddie always used to say about Gareth Breeze, he's that bad in one day cricket. He's very, very good because he bowls no pace on it. And every time he drags it down, you think, right, I can hit this as far as I possibly can. But because there's no pace on it, you end up picking somebody out, which would have been six anywhere else in the country. So there's one thing about having smaller ground to emulate what was it, Headingley. The other was actually playing on it. And I just thought Yorkshire didn't turn up. If it wasn't for Gary Balance, that game would have been finished, I think, after about 15 overs each, because, you know, they're nowhere near. You know, what, the 40, I think they were 40 for three in the power play. Sussex were always just that one step ahead, even though they needed Rashid Khan to get 20, 27, I think, off nine balls late on.
Yeah, well, exactly. I was going to say, I mean, Yorkshire might still have pipped it, but how's Rashid Khan? I mean, you know, one for 25 as well in his four overs, bowling as always when the heat was on, and then 27 not out off nine balls. And also at the same time, in between playing cricket, talking with real passion and humility as his country is torn asunder. I mean, I just... Absolutely astonishing. I mean, cricketers have been known over the centuries to play under difficult conditions, but I cannot imagine what he's going through. Now then, Hampshire winning a game they had absolutely no right whatsoever to win at Trent Bridge. They're 40 for five. They scrape themselves. I didn't even think it was respectable, 125 for nine. And then Notts Outlaws are cracking along at 66 for one, needing 126. And a bowled out for 123. I mean, you know, we always say never give up, but the fat lady was clearing her throat a long time before that game was over.
Oh, definitely. I was nearly switching it off. It was game over. I couldn't believe they got it was the world in their hands, not taken away. And even Carter at the end, you know, he whacked a couple of sixes, and you think they might get over the line, but. Now, Hampshire is their name on the trophy because they've played some good cricket in the T20. They didn't deserve to win it. They did deserve to win it because they pulled it out of the bag right at the very end. But it's like Notts leaving it to somebody else. Nah, he'll do it. We only need six and over. He'll do it. All of a sudden, wow. Yeah, we need our big bowler, big spinner to come in at the end and whack three or four sixes to try and get us over the line. And unfortunately, when you're leaving it to somebody else, more often than not, that somebody else doesn't arrive and you end up getting beat. And that's what that's how Hampshire got through.
Tell you whose name I think's on the trophy. After the thumping win at the Cooper's County Ground in Taunton is Somerset. I mean, Lancashire made 184 for nine, Dane Villiers 42. Rulaf Bundamirva, two 36-year-old South Africans. These two kids
kids, 36-year-olds. I mean, what I meant was they grew up as kids. They've known each other all their cricketing lives. But Somerset just chewed that chase up and spat it out. I mean, they're winning with 11 balls to spare.
Yeah, I like them. I like them. Lamonby as well. I like that young guy. I think he's got a bit of something about him. He's got Somerset over the line a couple of times now. And I know, I think Tommy Abel did the bulk of the work in this game. And you're right, 11 balls in 2020 cricket, that's, you know, that's an easy win. That's a coasting win. So, and even chasing 185, they never really looked in trouble, Somerset, I thought. And Tommy Abel, he looked very, very accomplished, assured, and he knew he was in control of that run chase, 100-run partnership at the end to see his team through. And yeah, they're as good as you'll get. But I've got a sneaky feeling that this Kent Spitfire side are a decent side, and they looked electric in the field the other night. And I just wonder if that they're not household superstar names, but they've got players, I think, with a bit of experience. And they might just give them a run for their money, Kent.
Yeah, Birmingham Bears were 84 for 7 and it looked game over. But our new friend Jake Lintott, yeah, top scored with 41 off 20. Just a reminder that after that game, he was due to travel to Barbados to play in the Caribbean Premier League. But his club side had a really important game to win the league. And so he travelled home to play a game of club cricket on the Saturday. His club lost, but they won the league anyway, managed to sneak through. He batted at number 4, and then he packed his bags and went to Heathrow to fly to Barbados.
And they were all, you know, speculating on a TV and saying there's a film in this, there's a great film in this, is that a Moneyball film? And look, he's been a breath of fresh air this summer for Warwickshire and, you know, in the 100. And also now, he's now in the Caribbean. How is he? Look, imagine going back into the school after that, telling the kids, you know, the story of your, you know, this is your life for the last year. Can you imagine little Johnny going to the teacher, yeah, what have you been doing for the school holidays? And he rhymes up, well, I played in first-class cricket, I played in the 100, I played in the T20 Blast, I played in the Caribbean. And the teacher going, yeah, right, I bet you did. You can just see that happening. So, no, well done to him. Good luck to him in the Caribbean Premier League, but just not quite enough. Brezzy got 4 wickets, but I like this Kent side. I really do. Bell Drummond, Billings. I think they've got something about them, and they've got a little bit of pace with the bowling as well. So they'll not be favourites by any stretch of the imagination, but I think they've got a good team togetherness, and they might just surprise the other three side. Or they play Sussex first, and then if they get through, they might surprise if they get to the final.
Okay, just a minute and a half left to talk about COVID, and I've deliberately squeezed this section because you and I don't. I'm not going to ask you about the veracity of vaccinations or PCR tests, but there's a massive inconsistency in the way fixtures have been affected. Durham and Surrey have been called off in their championship game because of one positive case in the Surrey camp. They're two teams playing for 7th through 12th place in the championship. When England had 7 positive tests in just before the one-day series against Pakistan, they gathered together an entire new squad and pushed ahead boldly and won. When the 100 had 2 positive cases, they too carried on as usual. When Kent had 1 case, they drafted in a second 11. So can you spot a common denominator, Army? And I don't want to be cynical, you know, because there could be lots of medical reasons that you and I could probably never understand, however well they were explained to us. But it does seem that the more money involved, the more likely the games are to go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think it's cynical. I just think that's the reason. That's as simple as that. I don't think it's anything to do with being cynical. I just think it's a simple reason that this probably shows you how much, you know, we are valuing first-class cricket at this minute in time. Like I said before, your 7th to 18th spots in the county championship roster at the end of the season, where's the intensity? Like I said, a floor. It's not relevant anymore from that point of view. Sussex have seen that with their side. So to call a game off, that's very, very easy to do in a competition we're not really that bothered about. You know, we bookended it at the start. chucked it all at the end, chucked the rest at the end, and said, right, oh, there's a COVID test, we should call a game off. Both teams don't get 15 points each, and we'll move on to the next game. That, for me, is, yeah, I'm not being cynical. I'm trying to be as honest as I possibly can. The 100 carried on, the blast carried on, England's international programme carried on. But because we had a four-day game, well, you're going to get around about 2,500 people over 4 days, freezing cold up at Durham. Ah, we're not bothered about that game. We'll just call it off. You know, we'll go to next week. It might be warmer in the northeast next week. They'll be fine. We're not bothered about them. You know, what about these players that want to play and trying to forge their careers? You know, what about the members that have paid good money to come and, you know, try and find a way? You found a way in the 100. You found a way in the... I could understand if all of them had been called off. Yes. Yeah, consistency.
Yeah. When I said cynical, I mean, I understand there's a practical financial imperative to continue where games are massively financially embedded into the ECP's financial structures. And of course, but do you know what? That, you know, there are young players, lots of young players were given a chance. Surrey have made a bunch of new signings. And I felt for the players. I felt for those 2,500 people.
Yeah,
you know, if you can make it happen. Yeah. Now, tributes have been pouring in for the former England captain and chairman of selectors, Ted Dexter, who passed away at the age of 86 last week. Let's hear now from our very own Mark Nicholas, who spoke to Jim White over on TalkSport.
Because I'm quite close to the family, I sort of felt it was in the offing. He quite a downward spiral in the last month or so. And in a way, it was a relief to see him out of the pain. And, you know, so often with these situations, the suffering isn't worth it, as he was clinging on, really. So very sad, very much my boyhood hero, a mentor in many ways, and a dear friend. I played a lot of golf with him. He was a fantastic golfer, you know. They talk about his cricket, but he could seriously play golf. And he's a terrible loss because he was an unusual figure, unique in many, many ways.
Tell me about the chat between the two of you when you'd played golf, because I know you were very close, Mark.
When I say he could really play, I mean he could really play. Gary Player told me that he was the best amateur striker of a golf ball he'd ever seen. And in a famous game in Australia in the early 60s with Player and Jack Nicklaus, he was the one who emerged triumphant, so he could play. And, of course, it was galling playing alongside him. So there was a lot of mickey taking about my feeble efforts compared to his. But, you know, he was very deep on cricket. Very forward-thinking. He's the best forward-thinker about the game that I've ever spoken to. Even in the last month, he's had ideas about how English cricket could move forward to fit all the cricket that's currently being played into the structure of the summer. And he was always sort of investigating. He loved to gamble. He punted on the dogs and the horses. He loved speed. He had a Norton motorbike. He flew a plane. He had Jaguars. I mean, Ted lived life hard and well, and that was part of the attraction of being around him. He had a lot of charisma.
And Mark, overall, how would you, it's almost impossible, I suppose, to answer, but how do you measure the sheer impact he had on the sport of cricket?
Oh, highly. That's a great question, Jim. And the answer is highly and perhaps underestimated as such. He was a magnificent player, a stroke maker, a powerful hitter of the ball, particularly off the back foot. He took on the fast bowlers. When he walked to the wicket, a bit like Ben Stokes today, you know, when he walks to the wicket, everybody stops doing what they're doing. You know, the bar's empty, the seats fill. But he was a modernist. So his impact on the one-day game, he thought up the one-day game long before it was first played in 1963. He made all the tactics his own, and Sussex, his county, won the first two Gillette Cups. He thought up 4-day cricket. He thought up central contracts for England players. He was a forward thinker, and he invented the ICC world rankings, the Deloitte world rankings, as they used to be. That was completely his through his own PR company. He invented the spirit of cricket with Colin Cowdrey. He's had an immeasurable impact to the game, very modest. And so you never heard him shout from the rooftops about what he'd achieved. He was especially proud of the world rankings, primarily because he said, I have rather a high opinion of myself, he once told me. And there was a week in my life when, had there been a world rankings in my time, I'd have been top of it.
Mark, finally, where does he rank? To you, where does he rank amongst England captains?
Well, his captaincy was sometimes criticised for reasons that are quite complex. He was certainly an out-of-the-box thinker. He certainly got a bit stuck if it got dull. He'd do weird things to try to change the course of the play if he felt it was going nowhere. Innovation, yes. Maybe not the best communicator. There was an aloof aspect to Ted. So communication, perhaps below par, tactically well above par, and a fascinating guy to play for.
Well, it's certainly a life worth celebrating. And many people have made that point. I mean, he would have wanted people to celebrate his life. Harmy, a couple of minutes left. I've got a couple of quick fire questions for you. I think it's fair to say, and this is a generalization, but I think it's probably one that you won't dispute. Most fast bowlers take to test cricket at the start of their careers like ducks to tarmac, and it takes a while to find your way. Do you recall anybody taking to test cricket quite as well as Ollie Robinson?
Not really, no. I think he's looked quite assured, but I think we've got to also remember a lot of players come into test matches, into their test career at the age of 21, 22, 23, if that. He's a little bit older, he's a little bit wiser, and the one thing about him, he knows his game. He looks very, very simple with his how he wants to perform, which is I bowl the ball around about 82, 83 mile an hour on a fuller length from a tall bowler's point of view, and I'll bowl there all day. It reminds me of like the McGrath type when McGrath was coming to the end where you just constantly hit the same spot and not get bored of hitting that same spot. But I think in this game, he showed his skill level a little bit more because the one he got Pujara with was an absolute beauty. Shoulder arms swung back in. It was a fantastic ball. So he's not just a line bowler that hits the seam and in and around off stump. I think he's got a skill set there which he's developing and working. And he spoke warmly afterwards of just playing with Jimmy Anderson. And I remember playing in one of my early test matches against South Africa. And I played with Martin Bicknell. I only played one test with Martin Bicknell. And I reckon I learned more off Martin Bicknell and the short time playing with Jabagarh Srinath than I did of any other bowling coach, because of how setting batsmen up, just standing mid-off and asking them questions, you know, in between and like the net situation, talking to them. And Bickers, yeah, he only played once for England and with me. But I felt as though in them 4 days beforehand and during the test match against South Africa at the Oval, I think it was Alex Stewart's last game, I learned a hell of a lot. So Ollie Robinson, while he's still going, Jimmy Anderson, you take as much as you can in because, you know, Jimmy's still got the skill sets, still performing, and he's still got the knowledge to pass on.
You were talking about Ollie Robinson talking about playing with Jimmy Anderson, and our magician of a producer, Scott Taylor, has looked in his magic hat. And apart from all the rabbits in there, he's managed to find that clip that you just mentioned.
I noticed Jimmy held his wobble grip slightly different to how I held it and a few others held it. So I spoke to him in the week when we got back to Henley after the break and just tried to practice it in the nets, and it went quite nicely in the nets. So I tried it in the game and it worked quite well. Something that I need to practice a bit more, but this learning off Jimmy is invaluable for me at this stage of my career, and luckily it came off today.
That's Ollie Robinson talking about playing with Jimmy Anderson. Just a minute or so left. And I've been slightly sidetracked and distracted over the last half an hour. Ever since you mentioned about the possibility of Jimmy Anderson retiring and going out at Old Trafford, and I've been sort of trying to stop myself choking up a little bit. It never, ever, ever occurred to me. He still talks about his hunger for playing cricket, and he's bowling as well as ever. Slightly better than ever, possibly. Some of the overs he's bowled against India have been mind-numbingly good. Do you know what? The one thing is, that if anybody listening thinks Harmy obviously knows something, I will tell you for sure that if you did know something, you wouldn't have opened your mouth at all. You would not have let the cat out of the bag. So you clearly know absolutely nothing. You've heard nothing on the grapevine. It's just a feeling that you have.
It's a feeling I have. But I put myself in Jimmy's shoes and I'm thinking the Ashes is going to be compromised. Are we going to send the best team? Probably not. Am I actually going to go because of, you know, the family and Daniela not being allowed to go and everything that's going to come with that, the time away over Christmas? Do I really want to go into another summer against the West Indies and Pakistan, I think it is, finish at the Oval? and potentially one injury away, i.e. when he got injured in the Ashes last time or in South Africa, injured one injury away from not finishing on my terms. I'm bowling brilliantly this summer. I'm going to win. I'm going to try and win the last Test match at the ground which has got an end named after me, the last Test of the summer. It's always at the Oval. This time it's at Manchester. Is there a better way to go out? Winning the Ashes would be great, but I might not get there. I'd be thinking, you know what? I might walk off at the end of Old Trafford and say that's my lot, or before Old Trafford and say this is the last one, because Alistair Cook, and I'm not saying this in derogatory terms, because this is what Alistair Cook said. He said that Oval Test match for him was like a benefit match. He deserved a benefit match for playing 160-odd Test matches and scoring all them hundreds for England. Well, I think if somebody else deserves a benefit match, it's Jimmy Anderson, and it'll be Sir Jimmy Anderson soon. And to walk off at the end that's named after you, at the end of your career, in front of 25,000 Lancastrians, not sure a story could be written any better than that for me in my career. The way he's bowling, the summer he's had, might just be, you know what, it might be time for me to go here. And what a fairy tale it would be for me.
Well, Harmy may not have had exclusive word from the Anderson camp, but he has from Buckingham Palace. We've had a bunch of exclusives on the show this week. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed. Now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week to look back at the fourth test. But for now, this has been the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.